Blog Talk Radio.
Sooner we'll be done. From the Lord of the world, I'm going to leave with all.
Welcome to the Leadership Advantage Book Watch Show. I am here with my wife, Charlotte, welcoming everyone as you call in and share your comments and your thoughts about the book, about your leadership experiences, and just about the week that we've had a lot of fun communicating and seeing a lot of interaction by a lot of people who like the book or like us, and both are acceptable. Hello, Charlotte.
Good morning, Earl, and I just want to say I personally am excited about the book launch. It has been a really busy week, and after last night's interview with Dr. Anthony Miles on Blog Talk about social media, you were right there using it this week. It was my pleasure to support you and your social media book launch campaign.
Yeah, this is the first book launch of this type that our publisher has undertaken. So I agreed to be the guinea pig, if you would. And I think it has a lot of promise. It really depends on the book and the author, but regardless of that, it's been a lot of fun, and hopefully all the people that have participated have had fun with it. Matter of fact, I also participated in parallel this week with another book launch by a friend and acquaintance of mine, Ann Graham, who lives in Canada, and Ann also had her book launch this week, and so we had emails flying back and forth on her book launch. She was extremely successful, and the last email I got from Ann, she said that she was taking the weekend off. She was going to take her boat and go to some quiet area, harbor, and take a breather. And it would be a well-deserved breather, I'm sure.
I bet. Yes, well, these are hard work, as we know, and they can't happen without the assistance of all the people who actually get on their social media and support back. So there was a good week for everybody, I think.
Yeah, that's good. And remind those that are calling in to share comments and jump in the kitty for the giveaway that we're going to do at the end of the show, that you have to hit the number one on your phone such that we can see that you are interested in getting on and sharing some comments and being a part of this book launch this morning. Just hit the number one on your phones.
Well, I tell you what, Earl, I have ordered your book, gifted your book, and talked about your book on many, many occasions.
Yeah. We've really been pleased with the kind of acceptance that we've had, and it's hopefully a publication that will help and motivate and inspire. And certainly, it's from my perspective, if I could look back on my 40 years of corporate and organizational leadership, I wish I'd have had it when I was a young manager.
Well, isn't that the truth? There are a couple of things in there.
Yep. Right. Well, looks like we've got a couple of callers. Let's just invite them in. We've got a caller from the 719 area code. That looks like a Colorado area code. Let's bring them on. Hi.
Very
welcome
good.
To the book launch. Who do we have here?
Julius Grant.
Oh, hi. Thanks for calling.
Good morning.
Oh, I just called. I want to congratulate you on your book. And I have not finished
it
yet. But I have not finished it yet, but I'm in the process of trying to get through it. But so far, I've really enjoyed it. There's a lot of good points in there.
Very good. Well, thank you. And thanks for calling. And thanks for being a part of this.
Thanks for supporting us. As always, you are one of our regular listeners, and we so appreciate you.
Okay. All right. But you guys take care, and I hope you the best of luck.
Thank you very
much.
Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. Good. Earl, I see we have another caller as well.
Yeah, let's see who else is. Very good. Go right ahead. You got to bring her from the 425 area code.
I sure will. My blog talks a little slow. Good morning. Welcome to the book launch for the Leadership Advantage. Who are we speaking with?
Good morning, Charlotte. This is Iggy Castro from Edmonds,
oh,
Washington.
Hi, Iggy. Welcome. Good morning to you.
I'm on travel.
Hi, Iggy.
Good morning, Earl. How are you?
Good. Thanks for calling in. It's kind of early out our way. It's noon back on the East Coast, but glad you were able to at least give us a call here.
Yeah,
thank you.
I'm on travel, but I thought I would call and just let you know that I've enjoyed the book. I've read it front to back twice already, and every time I read it, I find something else. I thought I knew everything before I read it, but I that wasn't quite true. And you make excellent points throughout the book, and I just it's been fun reading it. You should be very proud, and I wish you the best of luck with the book.
Well, very good. Thank you, and safe travels there. Have a good weekend.
Thanks for calling
Thank you
in,
much.
Nikki. Okay, have
bye-bye.
A great day. Thank you. You know, Earl, one of the things I liked most about your book was the context of which you sort of coached and explained. It wasn't just about it wasn't just a word, as we see, or just a handle. It actually talked to the context of which we find ourselves as leaders, like clarity, right, in your section of clarity. And this is really important to me because people tell me I get a little esoteric in my words and my vocabulary. And you talk about that. It leads to effective communication, but it also... there are some barriers to being clear, and one of those is our own internal failure to listen well, right?
Yeah. Well, as you know, I've been a student of leadership for a long time, and in my studies, and even when I was, the adjunct professor at Keller, teaching entrepreneurship and business management, I always enjoyed when we got to the part in the semester where we spent some time talking about organizational management and organizational leadership, because in my experience, coming out of initially what 5 years of technical experience, as an engineer and as a systems engineer, and getting into management through the program management areas, the idea of, in college I had some courses, some management courses, and they talked about leadership in a way, but it never really got into the essence about how those terms, how those actions, how those attributes really changed based on the leader, based on the environment, based on, like I know now, across 3 or 4 decades, based on, the time, the people you're leading. And most traditional, and I'm a big fan of, like, Warren Bennett, I'm a big fan of General Colin Powell, his couple of books on leadership. And the thing that I always pick out of their leadership books is they weren't just talking about what people think of in terms of what you need to do. They talked about it in terms of why you needed to do it. So that's why in both of the books that I've penned so far in my leadership development series, it's not just talking classically about what leadership is and what leaders should do. It's really talking about the competency, if you will, of leadership. And what I tried to do in Leadership Advantage, which is a book, as I mentioned, on the talk show a few weeks ago, that I had really wanted to write for a long time, but those people that are authors or want to be authors know that it's very difficult to find the time, the quality time in some extended period, you know, not just to, you know, outline a book or outline the concept, but in order to really get it to flow and to really dig deep and think of those messages and think of those relationships that you have in your mind, it takes time to put that down. You know, and I started this book, as you know, in 2011 with the idea that it was going to be done in 2012, and there was just no way. I mean, I had an outline, but I didn't really, you know, and the book really didn't take shape until about a year and a half after that, after I had written a lot of things, but then I began to really understand what was I trying to say. You know, why, what is, how can people think of leadership differently? And hopefully those who have had an opportunity to read some or all of the books, hopefully they'll walk away with the sense that I'm just not, you know, throwing out or sharing a message. I'm sort of walking with them through these messages.
I get that. I got that right away. As a seasoned leader, supervisor, manager of complicated and complex processes and people, you know, you your leadership has to be adaptable, which means I have to be adaptable. And I think that's the message that you hear a lot, but you don't always, I can speak for myself, don't always know how to be adaptable. And I think that's where the Leadership Advantage really nailed it, because it talked about really starting with ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. And the traits vary, as I just said. I mean, I can think back in the early 70s or the early 80s, really, when I was actually in management positions at Motorola. You know, you think of motivation. Well, motivating the people and the teams that I had working for me in 1984 was totally different than trying to, you know, trying to motivate a team today, you know what I mean, in this digital world and in this world you know, that's moving so quickly and this whole Y generation, you know what I mean? So you just can't, so you need to go back. Yeah, the tenets of motivation are still there, but to truly think of motivation in terms of your current position, with your current relationship, with your current organization. And that's how I tried to structure the book. Yeah, it's classical in terms of what motivates people, but what motivates people today isn't what motivated people 20 years ago.
Very true. Very true. Just a reminder to those who are on hold with us, just press the number 1 in your keypad and we will bring you in to join the conversation.
Probably one of the favorite parts of the book, and I've gotten a lot of feedback from people that have read it and the number of reviews that I've gotten, is when I talk about this idea of leading yourself. Let me just read a little excerpt, and this is actually from the preface of the book, for those of you who hadn't had a chance to read it. You know, I say, I recall once hearing, when you learn to be a good leader of yourself, you also learn to be a good you learn to be a good person, a good husband or wife, a good father or mother, a good student, a good teacher, and a good communicator. In the normal progression of one's career, where opportunity and experience enables more opportunity and more experience, maybe a good leader of self also evolves into a good conflict manager, a good goal setter, a good planner, a good coach, and eventually a good leader of others. And that's something that I have seen throughout all of the various organizations that I've been a part of. When I dig deep, you know, I think it had more to do with, you know, talk about presence and those types of things. But you got to lead yourself to those decisions. You got to lead yourself to want to say those messages. You got to lead yourself in a way that's consistent with those messages. So leading yourself is just as important as leading a team or leading your family or leading an organization. I think that's where it all starts.
Definitely. Well, Earl, let me just bring in another caller on our book launch. I want to welcome in Alberta from Colorado Springs. Good morning, Alberta.
Good morning. Good morning. I'm calling
good morning.
To congratulate. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thank
Wonderful.
You.
Good. I'm calling to congratulate Earl Cobbs on his new book, The Leadership Advantage. Do more, learn more, and earn more. Well, I really like that earning more. So then, I'm working in a leadership program, trying a new business, and I'm trying to improve my skills. So I'm being inspired by reading Mr. Cobb's book. And then some points I like to keep in mind is appreciation and how I appreciate learning how to appreciate things, reflection and socialization and experimentation. So then I'm honing my skills. I really like that part. So I'm really learning from your book, Mr. Cobbs. So I do appreciate it, and thank you for writing.
Well, you're very welcome. Thanks for calling and sharing that and participating in the book launch today.
Okay,
thank you.
I appreciate
so
you too.
All
right.
Okay.
Bye.
Have a good weekend.
Okay,
yeah,
bye.
You betcha.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay.
Well, that was great.
Yeah, that was. That was. One of the other things that I wanted to spend some time doing in the book up front was to sort of share with the reader how I develop what I call the 10 absolute attributes of leadership. Because as I said in the book, you know, leadership isn't something new, and trying to define leader traits and trying to determine what makes a good leader and where the leaders are born or leaders are developed, you know, goes back for centuries, you know. And those who are students of leadership in the literature are very well aware of that. But the thing that really pushed me in the direction of the 10 traits that I have defined as the absolute attributes had more to do with three things, as I said in the book. One is I thought about what would I want in a leader, you know, someone that I worked for or someone that I work with or someone that I've followed. What are those traits that I would want that person to have? I'm not saying that you want that person to have a limited number of traits, only have 10 traits. you know, you hope they have some of all traits available, so when the time required, they could utilize that. But if they only had 10, you know, what would be those type? What type of person would you want to work for? And the second thing is they would have to be traits that were humanistic, that is, were inherent to every individual, whether they developed them or not, or whether they realized they had them or not, you know, because there are some leadership traits that are truly esoteric, if you will, or learned, because it only focuses on one thing. You know, like when I was a program manager and you learn all of these the program management skills and techniques, those were great when you were talking about projects and schedules and those types of things. You know what I mean? Great traits to have for that particular type of thing. But what are those traits that are just good regardless of the situation or regardless of the leadership need? Okay. And the third thing is I wanted the attributes to be traits that we all have some of them, but also traits that if we spend our time, we all could improve and enhance based on what we needed at the time and based on our ability, because we all aren't good at everything, okay? And there are some things that we're better at than others. And most of the leaders or most of the people that are successful tend to do those things they're best at most. Okay. So when I came up with presence, vision, clarity, persistence, motivation, unselfishness, deliberation, courage, respect, and focus, you know, I think those are 10 attributes that you can take either one of those and say, would I want to work for a person that had none of that?
Absolutely not. Those are the kinds of attributes that we want in a leader.
Right, exactly. And also, Charlotte, while we're waiting on others to join the show over the hour here, I sometimes get asked, you know, the leadership advantage, and I talk about advantages, and they're saying, well, why are you talking about taking advantage? Well, I'm not talking about taking advantage. Let me just play a little clip that came from one of our earlier shows that I did on the idea of advantage to sort of share with our listening audience here today or who will listen to this podcast what I mean when I talk about advantages. And one of the things that I stress when I give lectures and talk to people, and I try to clarify early, you know, I'm not talking about taking advantage. You know, taking advantage of someone or taking advantage, okay?
Right.
When I talk about leveraging advantages or creating advantages, like I said earlier in the show, an advantage is about being in a favorable position.
Right.
And if you
right.
really think through every individual were or where they are because of something or someone, whether it's birthright, support, friendship, your looks, your height, you know what I mean? So it's not within a society that's sort of just how it works. So it's not a sense of taking advantage of anything.
Right.
You know,
right.
it's understanding how to put yourself in a more favorable position.
Well, Earl, I know I often get that feedback as well, that it just feels like it's, you know, it's because it's hard to put yourself in a favorable position, then it sometimes feels like it's not okay, like we ought to be chosen. I think that's a struggle that a lot of people have.
Yep, you're absolutely right. And for those of you who haven't heard that podcast, it's one of the programs we did a few weeks ago on the idea of advantages, and it really puts in perspective, I think, you know, the idea of putting yourself in the best position. And those people that do that are generally the ones that you see, you know, getting the job, seeming to always be on top of it. Only because they are realizing that they've got to adapt to various situations and use what they have and what God has given them to get through every situation.
Right. Well, okay,
I see we have
another caller.
Yes. Yeah, let's take another caller.
Let's just bring them in. Good morning, and welcome to the Book Lodge for the Leadership Advantage. Who am I speaking with?
This is Andrew from Denver, Colorado.
Good morning, Andrew.
Hi, how are you?
Fabulous.
Good morning, Andrew. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Earl. Congratulations on your book.
Thank you.
I'm certainly looking forward to this program. But I wanted to just share, just for a moment, I was reading a book, and there was a quote by C.S. Lewis, a religious writer. He said, a man's spiritual health is exactly proportional to his love for God. And as I was reading some parts of your book, I believe leadership advantage, I believe, is proportional to how much you desire to want to be a leader. And I would like for you to comment on this, is how would you guide a young person who is just starting out in a career? How would you guide them to incorporate the concepts you have in your book so that as they continue to rise in their company, it will make an advantage to them in reaching their goals.
Mm.
Well, that's a very good question and thought. You know, that, Andrew, that really gets back to hopefully what comes out in the book, where I try to frame the 10 attributes, not just in terms of organizational leadership, but also in terms of personal leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And for example, when we talk about presence, somebody noticing you when you walk into the room.
Right. Well,
if you're president of the United States, okay, because of your position or because of the respect that those who elected you have, you walk into the room, you get that mm-hmm. respect because you're president of the United States, along with other attributes to say this person really has a lot of presence. Well, when you walk onto that job for the first day as a young person, regardless of what the career,
mm-hmm.
you got to think that you will make a better perception, because we're all about what people perceive us to be, if you
exactly.
understood the idea of presence and what it takes for you to have presence. So you as an individual, when you walk into the job for the first time, or when you walk into the church for the first time, or when you walk into a homeowners association meeting for the first time, or when you go to pick up your kids, that presence is what makes the other person that's receiving that presence really have a sense of who you are, your genuineness, your authenticness. So yes, you can extrapolate presence in the most senior management role, but you can also
mm-hmm.
think about personal presence, and the same discussion about the attributes applies to the young person getting the first job, as the manager who's changing and moving into a new organization, or the seasoned manager who sort of have taken presence for granted for 25 years and finding out that it ain't quite the same because the people in your organization are from a different generation. I need to think
mm-hmm.
about how do I be perceived. So, and that applies to vision. I mean, if a young person going in for the first time into a job, I mean, the idea of vision, that sort of knowing where you want to go and knowing what where the end is, applies to you as well. When you walk in that for the first day in the job, if someone perceives that you're just not in the moment, which is good, but you also can think about, have some vision of where your job will take you or where the next promotion is going to go. So, yes, I think whether you're the most senior of a manager of an organization or an individual, the idea of these attributes and the idea that because you look at leadership, because you have a perspective of leadership, not as something that someone else does, but as
mm-hmm.
something that you do, I think would have extreme value to you.
Great. I think the book will give a young person a great motivational tool to continue to do more than what they think they can do. And I think your book has a great idea to begin to look at themselves the moment they have accepted a position and understanding what you're saying about how people will perceive them. Thank you so much. I will certainly recommend the book to many young people to get them running instead of walking when they get into the corporate world. I appreciate your show. Appreciate
there,
your insight.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Thank you very
okay,
much.
Thanks for calling. Thanks for being a part of the book launch this morning. Yep.
Okay.
Great question.
Very good point. You know, one of the things about being a leader is not waiting to be, what's the word I want to look, what I ask, I think use is like not waiting to be dubbed or granted permission through position, but it's really a mindset. You know, Earl, one of the things that struck me early on when I was reading the book was, you know, you described the sort of innate traits that leaders will have. And those are the things I think we all expect them to have, like honesty and confidence and reliability and decisiveness, determination. And those are the things I think that resonate naturally with people. And they look for those in leaders, and we look for those in ourselves as we take on leadership positions. And I think that's what, you know, but the 10 absolute attributes, and I wanted to bring that up because there, you talk about we all have these innate traits, honesty, responsibility, decisiveness, that we use and leverage and strengthen. But the leadership advantage, and that's where I think the distinction is, that we can maximize our leadership advantage if we understand what the absolute traits are. And that's where I think that I wanted to make sure people could see that sort of the juxtaposition of what we can leverage internally and then what these absolute traits that maximize our levels of leadership.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. You know, I found, and even myself, particularly earlier in my career, in my life, you know, I sort of, we tend to just look at the output or the outcomes and not think about what it takes to generate those outputs and those outcomes. And we tend to take for granted some of the fundamentals or some of the things that are associated with human interactions and human communications and body language and persistence and all those things. And, you know, when I talk to young people, particularly young men, I use the basketball analogy to try to get them to think about some of these fundamentals in terms of what really makes up how you get to certain outcomes or how you get to something that you want. And when you think of it this way, you know, let's take LeBron James, for example, since he's probably the most famous current active star, right? Well, when you look at his stats, right, you see the rebounds and you see the points and you see the assist and all of those types of things, right? Outcomes. Mm-hmm. People like to see the outcomes, right? Look at that red Mercedes. Want one of those outcomes? You know what I mean? Look at that 6,000 square foot house, man. Oh, outcomes, right? But when you can, if you're able to step back and look at fundamentally what people do to get into those positions. Now, staying with the basketball analogy, okay? When you see LeBron make that left-handed layup, what you don't think about is that years ago when he was younger, someone had to impress upon him, you need to be able to make layups with your left hand. And probably when he was 10 years old, he thought that was, what? I got a right hand, right? But if someone had imposed upon him that making your layup with both hands can be important, and he spent probably hours, I don't know, I'm just thinking out loud, hours perfecting that one little thing, that little left hand layup. Just that 20 years later, when he's the best in the world, he don't think about whether he's going to go with the right hand or let up, because he's just as competent with either if he finds himself up in the air and in that situation.
Right.
Okay. Another example with basketball. You know, you see the sharpshooters, you know, like with the Golden State, the guys are able to just seem like they just, if you give them a fraction of a second, you know, that you're not in their face and that ball just goes in there, right? But just think about the fundamentals that goes with that. The idea of squaring your body, the idea of squaring the ball in your hand, the idea of philosophy, the idea of a certain spin on the ball, okay? Those are the same things as you walk in the room, you know, the basketball sharpshooter think of squareness, spin on the ball, velocity, speed, tempo. Well, when you walk in the room leading someone or leading yourself, that's like not having to think about vision, not having to think about clarity, not having to think about persistence, not having to think about motivation, because it's just a part of who you are. You sort of work that in your game, if you will.
Right.
That's what the leadership advantage tries to expand upon.
Mm. You know, it's sort of like in my work, I think about it as it's really sort of the neurology part where if you practice, right, and repeat the behavior that you want to see frequently enough, you increase and actually strengthen your synapses so that it feels like muscle memory. Right, it feels it feels natural, but it doesn't start off, to your point with LeBron practicing, it doesn't start off feeling natural. Starts off feeling awkward and kind of silly.
Right.
Right, but you don't get to this leadership advantage unless you first are aware of what these top 10 attributes are, and then you really do have to, as I think Alberta was saying, finally hone these skills. You've got to practice this so that it feels natural.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And, you know, speaking of things that feel natural, the one attribute that I had to spend more time researching and really thinking about in this category of the 10 is unselfishness. Okay.
Oh, very good.
Because as humans, it's all about self and survival. I mean, that's what's innate in us.
Especially and I know every leadership situation is in business, but that's especially true in business.
So the idea of maximizing your level of unselfishness isn't something that will just happen or something that should just happen without you really understanding what that means, its value to you, and the degree to which that action, if you will, or that value will benefit you. You know, at the beginning of the book, I sort of go through a discussion, if you will, sort of building up each of the 10 traits in terms of what we have, but is it enough in terms of being able to get the kind of results that we want, or in this case, to be able to do more and earn more. And when I talk about unselfishness, you know, I really take on the idea of thinking about what that really means. And here's where I say in the book, I say, we all have learned that being an effective team member requires a degree of compromise and unselfishness. But can we always balance what may be perceived as unselfish or big-heartedness with what can also be interpreted as a weakness? And that's the challenge with this idea, this attribute of unselfishness, because unselfishness doesn't mean being weak. Unselfishness meaning understanding, whether it's an organization or yourself or whatever, what would a maximum amount of that attribute, you know, do for me in terms of understanding compromise and what compromise really is, you know, and understanding the whole process of compromise and understanding the behaviors associated with that. And at the end of every chapter, for those who have read the book or will get a chance to read the book of Leadership Advantage, I have this table, okay, I call it a table, a diagram, which I say will help enable each attribute, in this case, unselfishness, to play a role in helping you maximize your leadership advantage. And under unselfishness, I'll just use this as an example for those who haven't seen the book and had a chance to read it yet. In the table, on the left side, is average level of unselfishness. And on the right side, it's maximum level of unselfishness. And what I try to do is, even after you've read the book, you can go back. If you find yourself in a situation at work, at the office, with your spouse or whatever, where you get this feeling about, am I really being selfish? You know, you can just go back to right to page 96 and say, now, if I had a maximum level of unselfishness, you know, I would work on developing skills, okay, to be unselfish and to compromise as required. I would approach all situations requiring compromise, you know, and that gets back to, and I don't know, I forget who said this, but the thing about communications, the more you know about the other person's story, the better you'll be able to respond and communicate with that person, because everyone has a story, okay? But most of us walk into situations assuming that we know that person's story, assuming that that reaction is because of this action. And the idea of thinking about unselfishness and compromise, like I say, when you approach all situations requiring compromise, I don't mean you every situation you go, you're going to compromise. But if you approach every situation believing that, you know, this may require compromise, and if it does, I need to know this person's story. So you approach when John or Mary walk into your office with, tell me, what's really the issue? Rather than you assuming what the issue is, whether you react into their emotion. Okay.
Right.
So when you get into these attributes and into these diagrams, what I try to do is present it in such a way, it's not just a make me feel good, inspirational kind of story. It's something that will get you not only to think about it, but give you some tools to help think through that particular situation.
Right. Yep, and you know, because it's interesting that she would pick the issue around compromise and unselfishness, because again, with this idea of the practicing and learning these, or strengthening these traits so that they are a leadership advantage, you know, it started out with one of the things you said that resonated with me in the book is that positive intent makes the process of compromise productive. I thought that was a powerful statement. And where did that come from, Earl?
Just life and experience.
Experience.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All of us have been in situations where, you know, our afterthought, or when we think about it, we go, geez, I wish I hadn't said that. Or, geez, I really handled that wrong. And in many of those cases, it's because we didn't approach the situation such that we could allow, we could take ourselves out of it, if you will. See, unselfishness isn't just about doing. It's also about what you don't do.
Okay? Oh, good point.
And that's a big part of it. And particularly in today's world of social media, you know, last night we had the discussion with Dr. Miles.
Ed Miles, yes.
Yeah, about the social media and whatever. And what is really clear to me, you know, being, pre-social media and having to get into social media. Yeah, so, sort of, you know, 35 years into your career, you know, that type of thing. But what social media does, you know, is it presents some transparencies that many people aren't even aware of. Okay, that they are sharing things about themselves, and I'm not talking about you getting on your Facebook and putting, you know, posting a picture, or you getting on your LinkedIn, getting involved in a post or a conversation. You know, those are things that you do. Okay, but in today's social media, what happens is transparency is there because there are things that you don't do.
Okay.
You know, when someone sends you an email, you're assuming that that's a communication between you and that person. You're not aware that the technology is such. The person can find out whether or not you open that email or not.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The person can find out, you know, so they know more about you than you think you know. You know, you think you're, it's like going to your mailbox and open that letter and you say, I'm going to tear this up. He'll or she'll never know I got it. Well, it ain't that way.
No, and in fact,
if you believe that, you know, it ain't that way. You know, with the technology, the marketing, and the way things are today, okay, if you open up an email, you do anything on the internet, your parameters, your IP address, whatever, is very public. And people know when you open their email and if they never got the answer from you. Okay.
Well, and Dr. Miles was talking about how business uses just that very do or don't do action to begin to as part of their data mining. So they'll send out a question. If you don't respond or you don't send anything, then you get a nudge. You get a nudge by a question. And then if you answer that question, because answering that question triggers a whole other series of social media questions, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So
that's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. And see, that gets back to two of the 10 attributes I talk about in the Leadership Advantage that really fit into that category: courage and respect. You know what I mean? Because courage and respect is something that is all about perception. It's not about you. Okay? I mean, you can, you know, see a guy with a gun about to shoot another guy that you don't know, and you can run out in the middle of that and take that bullet, and you may think, boy, that was courage. In reality, someone else look at that and say, boy, that was dumb.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't courage. Courage is a perception. And the same thing with respect. Okay, you can act as if, you know, you think you respect situations or individuals or personalities, but it's just something about your body language or something about, and so when you tie that to this transparency of social media, you know, someone sends you an email and you open it. You know, remember in the old days where we didn't have emails, we had phone calls or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever you were, at least you had the respect to say, I'm going to return his or her call, or you're going to, you know what I mean? You had this idea about, you know, do unto others as you have them to do unto you. Well, in this world of social media, because you get so many emails or whatever, you assume that it's all just not there and no one's going to think about, I got it or whatever. And what that does is that helps shape people's perspective of your courage. You know, if it's, I got it, can't be there, sorry, won't be there. Courage to at least respond. You know what I mean? Or the respect of the fact that if you send it to me, I'm going to at least say, yep, I got it. You know, so that whole thing radiates into the workplace. It radiates into your relationship, your personal relationships, all of those things. So the idea of maximizing your leadership advantage in all 10 of these attributes isn't just about becoming a better leader of individuals, but like I say in the start of the book, it's about becoming a better leader of yourself, which comes about becoming a better person overall, because there's no way that you're not going to earn the everything this world has for you, okay, if you think of honestly assess yourself to say, you know, I'm really present in every moment. I listen to people. I really try to visualize where things are going so I know where I'm going. I think about how to be clear. If you got those things, if you're doing all of those things, then the outcome will happen. You will earn it. Whatever it is.
Very good. Very good. Oh, let's take another caller at this time.
Okay.
Okay.
Hello,
good
welcome.
Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Hi, this is Lois calling from Dallas.
Hi, Lois.
How are you?
Hi, Lois.
Good. Thanks so much for taking my call today. I'm really excited about the book. I'm so glad I tuned in because after reading some of your previous books, Mr. Cobb on Focused Leadership, the Living a Richer Life Pillow Talk, I am so excited because I think about the I haven't had a chance to read all of the book yet, I will admit, but just thinking about the way that it's written and how it really applies to today's environment. So I just want to say thank you and actually, you know, just congratulations to you.
Well, thank you. Thanks for calling, Lois. How are things down in Dallas? Are you guys still getting stormy weather down there?
Not so much right now, but it's
okay.
Warm and it's humid.
Yes, well, that would be Dallas,
yeah.
Right?
That's almost everywhere this time of year, I tell you.
Yeah,
that's
true.
Right. Well, I really appreciate you calling in and good hearing your voice.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you. I'm really looking forward to reading more of the book. And just like I said, congratulations on the launch. And listen, you guys have a great day.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank
you.
All right.
You
thanks. All right. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye now.
Bye. Yeah, that was
very
nice.
Very nice.
Well, let's see, Charlotte. We're getting down to about 8 minutes left here.
I can't believe it.
To be here to welcome callers and to finish off this this week. You know, one of the things that me and Richard mm-hmm. Press and the other partners in the business here is trying to do with the book launch here is to sort of test out this medium in terms of being able to support and promote the authors that's a part of the Richer Press team to be able to utilize social media as a way to connect, you know, because it's one thing, you know, planning a book signing and people have to be off on that Saturday or that Sunday or that night and come down or whatever. But the thing about that's intriguing about social media and really about book sales in general, not just from independent authors, that it's all about like-minded people and people that like your genre, your message, you know, because there's zillions of books and zillions of messages and billions mm-hmm. of those that are good and millions of those that are great. Okay.
Right.
So it's just such a large field, but it's really about trying to develop that listener base, that friendship, that relationship
mm-hmm.
with those people that are in need at that time, that also
mm-hmm.
find your message, what they're looking for. And hopefully we'll be able to take out of this particular exercise some good input to allow
right.
us to move forward with maybe other authors with this type of promotion medium.
Absolutely. And Earl, I think it's not just the book, which is a medium, and this online on air, which is another medium. But it's also the complexity at which our society and the pace our society is moving, and also just the volume of participants that are now in publishing. So as publishing has gone online and even the state old publishing firms are all moving through the two major distribution arms, Amazon and Barnes & Noble, it is harder and harder for an author to compete and be seen, no matter what. I mean, you could spend millions, and companies do. Companies still
right.
spend millions. But I think what I was learning from Dr. Miles last night is that in many cases, it's free. So is it worth it to you? Yes. And it's like the sage-old thing about advertising. You don't always know advertising works. You can know a little bit more about your targeted marketing, but
mm-hmm.
if you're not out there at all, people can't find you at all. So,
right. Yep.
So
yep.
At least you have to be present in the distribution places. But it's also the reason why something like focused leadership resonates. It's because you use it in your practice. Isn't that right, Earl?
Yep, sure do. And really, that's the kind of business that Richer Press is in, is helping
mm-hmm.
authors who use their books in their trade to be able to just better have a way to share their message consistently.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
But at the same time, being able to leave that message with their clients that they can continue to hear you and continue to
mm-hmm.
respond to some of the things that you have in your message.
Yeah, because no matter what, magazines and books are still around, and part of it is because even in our digital age, we only buy so much memory. We only buy so much cloud memory. But that book is still on the coffee table for you to pick up or pick up in the middle of the night so you're not waking up your spouse with your Nook or e-book on. So, you know, there's still advantages to everything. I know I have Leadership Advantage on my iPad. I have it on my Nook, and I have it in my hard copy for my spin class. So.
Yep, and I always, of course, being in my business that I'm in now, I read quite a bit, but I usually keep four or five different publications of different types,
mm-hmm.
you know, that I read in different situations. You know, John Grisham, I read on the treadmill every morning that I work out.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'm on chapter 27 now of Gray Mountain, and when I look at chapter 27, I say, well, at least I know I was on a treadmill for 27 times the last month or so. So there's benefits. And, yeah, that's right. You know, something to keep you entertained and an easy read. Let's see, as we're winding down here, let me think about a message that I'd like to share with those people that participated in the book launch, even if they couldn't participate in the live show today or couldn't call in.
Mm-hmm.
They certainly will have the opportunity to listen to this podcast for a while and get the messages. But let me start off by expressing my sincere gratitude for those people that like they see in church, not only gave but had in their heart to give, okay?
Yeah.
And who took not necessarily all week, but even took 10 minutes, okay,
mm-hmm.
To share and to collaborate. And certainly if there is ever the time, the opportunity for me to support you or to do something in your regard, certainly I hope there is no hesitation in you feeling that you can do that. And certainly one of the most important things I think I do every day in the 24 hours that I'm limited to, that all of us are limited to in a day, other than sleeping well, that's important to be able to sleep well, okay,
mm-hmm.
is to be able to help someone, to be able to take a minute to help someone do something that they're doing. Because you
right.
know that in return, when you're doing something, you have someone that you can call on that will cheer you on, that will take a few minutes out of their week to help you, if you will, go toward your dream. And
right.
It's those people and it's those kinds of relationships and it's those kinds of friendships that make me, when I am ready to go to sleep at night, have a good sense that I've had a full day, that I've responded, and I've got those types of people in my life. Now, let me finish up. I'm going to finish up this program the way I finish up the book, Leadership Advantage. At the end of the book, you'll read this. I say, as one of the greatest champions and athletes of our times, Michael Jordan once said, some people want it to happen. Some wish it would happen. Others make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
We made it happen. We had a book launch. We had a lot of people supporting us. We're very thankful. And I'm going to leave the show with this
Luna
song.
Will be done.
Tonight.
Trouble out of the world. Mm-hmm.